This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Christine McIver
and I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So welcome, Christine. Last week we heard a little bit about your early years in the South Island, Christchurch and Ashburton, and then your move to the Manawatu and family and your involvement is in dentistry, and you made the big decision to go back to retrain in dentistry because your family were now grown up and into high school years, right, as well. So tell us a little bit, let's just recap a little bit on that and what the training was like back in Wellington when you went back to retrain.
Yes, well, the retraining was a real eye-opener because things had certainly moved on in dentistry, not only for dental nurses as I was, but now we call dental therapists because they were sort of trying to attract male students in as well. But in dentistry as a whole, with all the new techniques and everything, so yes, and so there was a lot of learning. I had to do assignments, and we were monitored quite extensively for, and I went into the 12-week program, and then finally was signed off, and I was able to go into a school dental clinic at the time.
So you picked, I'll just pick up on a couple of things there. There were men coming into it, so are there men in the dental hubs in the schools nowadays, or is it?
Yes, there are. Not many, but there are, and they have brought a very good difference in the whole process of dentistry with children.
Right. And when you said it was a 12-week course, is there a difference? Is there a shorter course, a longer course?
Yes, there is. I had been out of it for a number of years, and so there was the two courses, the 8-week and the 12-week. So I continued on for another month after that time.
And the structure of dental nurses, I mean, we've gone back to that. There's the one training hub, which is in Wellington, and that's national, isn't it? Right through the country, is that right?
Yes, well, of course, that's closed now. So there's no dental schools in apart from Auckland AUT or the dental school in Dunedin. And now the students come out with a double degree, and one in dentistry, dental therapy, and one in hygiene. So they can go into private practice and work as a hygienist as well.
So they can mix
the two careers together.
So that's how it works now. So you came back in the 70s, 80s, you came out trained with a certificate or a diploma, or what did you
have? Yes, when I trained in the 60s, originally, I graduated with a certificate in dental nursing, and then further down the track, I'm not too sure when it changed, it was a dental, it was a diploma that they graduated with, and now it's a straight degree.
A lot longer
in their training.
As it all has. So then you came back to, so you'd done your retraining, you came back to Palmerston North.
Yes, so I went fully back, trained. And my first position back was in Woodville, the Woodville Dental Clinic, and attached to that was the Eka Tahuna school as well, so we combined that.
So that was in the 90s?
That was in 1995.
Right, okay.
And then I got a, because well, I used to travel through the gorge in those days. Just, the gorge is still
thinking,
open.
I was just thinking that every day, travelling through the gorge.
Yes, and so that was quite a mission. For part of it, from Woodville to Eka Tahuna, I could pick up a work car, which was quite good.
Oh, so the Eka Tahuna students didn't come to you?
No, I went to them. Right. I went to them. And so, you know, each school you went to, once again, you got in with a different group of staff and everything. So it was quite fascinating, really, just seeing how different little areas in the Manawatu worked.
So you were on your own again?
Yes, on our own. Then we then I got a position came up in fielding, so I didn't actually officially apply for it. It was just almost word of mouth that it was available, and I was available. So I just sort of, you know, moved over to the fielding group, and I really enjoyed that. Half sort of half country kids, half sort of city kids, and it was lovely. The staff and all the schools I was at in fielding were amazing.
So it was it one fielding hub in one school that they all came to you, or was it you were still going?
No, in those at that stage there were still different clinics in different schools. So each school had their own clinic, and maybe they were fed up a little country school would come to them as well, and that's how they were serviced. And then somewhere along that line, everything changed, and health and safety came into it in a big way, and all the clinics were closed because they realised that we were working with electricity and water.
Yes.
And so we were all had to go onto RCDs, and everything in our clinics had to be redone. It was quite a big thing. And then a little while after that, we started hearing talk from our management team that there was talk of them closing the school as school dental clinics. And we went into centralised hubs, and new places were built. So we closed all the older clinics. They weren't suitable. By now we were completely on computers.
I was just going to say, I was just trying to think, when did computers come in in this? About 2000, was it?
Possibly a bit later than that. We actually, as a region, we wanted to get all the fishhooks out of the computer program, so we were listening very carefully and watching very carefully what was happening in other areas. So it wasn't until well into the 2000s that we actually went completely onto computers.
So what I'm hearing still is you are as a dental nurse,
dental therapist.
So you're a dental therapist on your own, travelling around. That was the expectation of the role, wasn't it? Travelling around to the different centres, still doing the admin with the cards and the manual administration along that, making sure that every student is seen to. Where's your professional support? Do you have a professional body, or who supported you in that time?
Yes, well, we have, I haven't really gone into the fact that we became registered about this time.
Right.
So we became then registered dental therapists, which was a very big deal. Our union really worked hard at, I can remember going to see with another dental therapist, a local MP, to explain why we wanted this to happen. We wanted to be more recognised as a body. And that was quite a procedure, because now we have to do portfolios and like nurses do, and keep up with our education and the DHB that was responsible for us. We were all hooked in to the hospital system.
Right. And right from the start, or as once the registration came through?
Yes, even before that.
Okay. Okay.
So if there were, and then it was if there was any procedures that couldn't be done within our area, we could transfer them through to the hospital. For instance, if children needed multiple extractions, they could go under general anaesthetic, and that was all done through the hospital dental department.
Right.
And within that, we had a dental a director who was, we worked under, at the beginning, under his registration.
Right.
And he looked after us. And we had also, they weren't called dental nurse inspectors, but there was somebody who was dentally trained who would come and go through all our records and our procedures.
Right.
And the our person who was overall in charge of the registration, he would come and check our physical work that we were actually doing. So we were well looked after in that regard. And we weren't solely on our own.
Right.
And it was almost also at this stage, while I was still in fielding, that dental assistants came on board.
Good.
So now we had help in the, you know, dealing with autoclaving instruments, doing the charts, making appointments for people, and we were seeing more parental inclusion as well. So that we would make appointments for children to come in with their with a parent or a guardian, and that took a whole new life really, and that was very enjoyable because they would get involved and they could see, rather than getting a second hand story from the child, I've got to clean my teeth or all this sort of thing, we could talk to them directly, and we actually the dental assistants I had, we really made a lot of contacts in the community at that stage, and it was really it was a big improvement in what we were able to do.
And that's not to take away from what you've done, it's just that it seems to me what a huge job and a huge expectation on you, that hallelujah, that somebody has said, actually, this profession needs a bit more support.
Yeah.
And they put the money where their mouth is, really, and funded it, more importantly, which is good, too, that it happened. Wow. What about the patient? You know, we're now in 2000s, in the 2000s
Oh, well
period.
And truly into the 2000s, yes.
So what's happening to the standard of children's teeth? And that's, you know, we talked about last week about how they were pretty good, and you thought that maybe that there was less sugar in the diet. What's happening to the children?
Well, diet does play an enormous part, and the tooth cleaning side of it, we now had no time to go into the school setting and teach them that sort of thing. It was just a one-to-one education in the chair, which was good, but whether children are actually in the clinic setting, they're a lot more sort of it's not their patch. When you were in their classroom and talking to them, they were comfortable there, and I always felt that it was something we lost a little bit of.
And the teacher could pick up on it a little bit too at lunchtime.
Absolutely, and they had their little modules that they would teach as well. So, but yeah, generally, the fluoride in the water has made a huge difference. So we see a huge contrast. There was the children who were coming through had absolutely no, had no procedures done at all, and may well go through the rest of their life with nothing, because their hygiene's good, their diet's good, and they're regular coming in to have their, you know, their treatment.
So that was back in the 90s, you're talking about? Or
well, no, this is now.
Yeah.
There's a huge contrast between the child who's brought up with juice in their bottles and things like that. And we're also seeing a lot of the little migrant children coming in who've had less opportunities for a good diet. And they come in, and at the end of my dental nursing days, we were sending quite a few of those children to have a complete extraction of all their first teeth. Mm.
What happens then? So if their first teeth are extracted, do the second teeth come through healthy, or have they been impacted?
It's a mixed. Every child would be so different, but basically it gives a good chance for those second ones. But it's not an ideal situation. They're left with very little to chew on and all that sort of thing. So it's not an ideal situation. But when the whole mouth is just really in a bad way and the bacteria are everywhere, it's the best thing to do to get them a fresh start. And by then, normally by then, they're starting to get, their little front teeth as well, which are second teeth. And so gradually they get their full set again. And hopefully it can be kept under control.
That's right. And they're in this country where they've got greater opportunities. Last week you talked about as well that every child seemed to have a toothbrush. In your latter years and work, did every child still have a toothbrush, or was
not necessarily? It depended on the area you were working in. Of course, there were always the areas where children had electric toothbrushes, and others that just didn't have a toothbrush at all. And often if you delved deep into it, you'd find that there was sort of one toothbrush that served the whole family. And that's got its disadvantages. But also with the computers coming in, we are able to do diagnostic X-raying too.
Ah,
now that has changed the diagnostic side of things enormously. So we had to, through education, go through a whole program of learning how to take x-rays, develop x-rays and read x-rays, and now it all just comes up on a little screen and everybody can see it together. The patient can see it, the mother can see it, or the father or caregiver, and their treatment can be talked through, which has been really a huge development
good communication, isn't it? For people to understand if they can hear it and then see it as well. Much so. What an amazing profession, though, isn't it? It's sort of, I almost feel that it's been undervalued in those early years and come through, and yet it's so important, isn't it?
Well, the thing is that it's all part of our general health to look after our mouths and everything, and remembering that every tooth is hooked into our heart. So if there's a problem there, and the bacteria are going through our blood system, it is not. Children can get really, really sick and really ill, and the parents would say, "Oh, I wonder why they were really quiet and they weren't wanting to participate, and they weren't eating, and all this sort of thing." So it's not just to make your mouth look good, it helps with your speech. And I used to say to my children, I don't think I've ever met an opera singer with false teeth. So they could.
That's quite true, actually.
Or the latest pop person, they were following. They were always had a nice smile, so we could sort of work on the glamour part of it as well.
What a rich career, though. So you've stayed in Palmerston North, and what do you enjoy about Palmerston North, living in there? You've been here for 40 years.
And of course I'm retired now. I retired in 2016. And people ask me what I do all day. I say very little, and I enjoy doing nothing much, but really, really busy with just with people, situations. I enjoy doing floral work, and I love now sort of making occasions for at Easter time and Christmas time, decorating the house and doing all sorts of things. And our children now have grown up. They both live in Auckland now, so we've got grandchildren in Auckland, so that's a big part of what we enjoy doing. already booked in for the next set of school holidays, all that sort of thing. So life is really busy. And of course, as you get older, you find that your friends have health issues. It's taking meals and just supporting other people that are less fortunate than we are with our health.
What do you think that some of the changes have been in Palmerston North? In the time, you know, you started off with schools and community, children and things. Now the city has grown quite massively, hasn't it?
Yes, well, we've noticed, with the new housing going out all over the place and spreading out, new supermarkets going up, and we've noticed things like when we first arrived, the plaza wasn't there, and now, so we've got the plaza, which sort of everybody hones in on there, and we've noticed Broadway has been very popular, and then it's sort of gone down and then up again, and so changes in the city like that. But we really appreciate the artwork around the city. That's been really beautiful, and all those beautiful statues and things, and lots of progress in keeping up with the roads and all that sort of thing. It's been quite a lot of changes.
So when you came, was it a small, well, it's 75,000, wasn't it? Was it still diverse? I mean, I think when I came to Palmerston North, I loved the fact that it's 2 hours to go north, west, east, south, and you're somewhere. But also you've got the university communities, you've got the multicultural communities, you've got the the people, the farming communities. It's quite diverse, isn't it, really?
And that's that whole mix makes for a really lovely environment, really, for people to go into all sorts of different things, and it's brought new eating places so that you can enjoy the different tastes and smells of different places. Just a maturing, I guess, of the whole city.
And watching the rail coming, that's exciting, isn't it? You know, you caught the train down to Wellington to do your training and come back.
But we remembered when that got electrified, and now it's not, so lots of changes there.
Oh, really good. And getting back to dentistry and your passion with dentistry, is there one message that you would impart to your grandchildren and their children about dentistry or teeth or anything that you'd want to from that? It's been your passion, your life passion.
Well, I'm probably one of the meanest grandmothers in the world because I didn't come with bags full of sweets and things. And, you know, everything in moderation. Party time is party time. But normal things. And I was really, I'm really pleased that the children, my grandchildren, make their own lunches. So they're making, you know, little different things in their lunch boxes and doing it themselves, so they want to eat it, and coming home and making sure that really they're just well, you know, their diet is pretty good, and I've just been so blessed with son and daughter-in-law who really get that, and it's been a very easy sort of ride, but very proud of them and the fact that they've got beautiful teeth, orthodontic treatment coming out of their ears at the moment, but that seems to be pretty much par for the course of children of a certain age, and that will be amazing. They're very fortunate to have parents who can afford that sort of thing, because those extra things are not cheap.
Well, thank you very, very much, and enjoy your retirement, enjoy living here and the colours and the gifts of the community too in this world. So thank you
for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.